that Portlanders experience in the coming years. There's this really kind of nuanced point about climate related events and how those will only escalate in time as we see climate change worsen. And the city is not necessarily putting forth a transparent or clear plan to what it's going to do when those events happen and how that pertains to its response to homelessness in Portland. You know, that same week that that heat emergency happened and the heat wave happened, it was the first week of the camping ban that was supposed to be put in place. And so there needs to be more transparency and clear guidelines on what happens when, you know, it's 100 degrees, what happens when it's less than 20 degrees, and how to respond and make sure that lives aren't lost.
That was Kimberly Cortez, reporting intern at Street Roots, speaking with me about her latest story for the paper. It's called City Contractors Post Sweep Notifications Amid Heat Wave. Mayor Ted Wheeler declared a state of emergency July 2nd due to extreme heat, but city contractors continued posting sweep notifications on homeless encampments throughout the emergency. More information on that story is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find that survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey24.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
Hi, I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for Transpositive comes from KBOO members and RelationshipGardening.com, specializing in support and repair for couples. Virtual for Oregon and California. Information at couplescoach@gmail.com.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
All right. Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we're going to be talking about Project 2025 and especially what it's going to mean for trans people. Let's go around and introduce ourselves real quick. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
I'm Jean and I use she and her pronouns.
Sheila and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us, everyone. So I want to start by just giving a brief overview of what Project 2025 is for people who may not be aware of it. So Project 2025 is a 920-page blueprint of the Heritage Foundation's vision for a second Trump administration. And the Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank that was founded in 1973 and for decades has had significant influence over public policy making. So their plan, if Trump gets reelected this year, is to consolidate presidential control over the executive branch, meaning they want to give Trump more power than any president is supposed to have. And once they have that control, they have this extensive list of horrific policies they intend to implement, such as abolishing the Department of Education, dismantling the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association to try to prevent the public from learning about climate change, barring citizens from federal housing aid if they live with anyone who is not a legal citizen, ending the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, restricting abortion and emergency contraception, allowing adoption agencies to discriminate against same-sex couples, and much more. And some of the ways this plan is going after queer people, and especially trans people, include classifying any LGBTQ-related content as pornography, which they would then seek to outlaw. They even equate being trans with pornography and plan to literally jail people for being trans. And they also plan to disband the Gender Policy Council, cut federal funding for gender-affirming care for children and adults, end CDC data collection on gender identity, research and enforce conversion therapy for children, legally redefine gender as biological sex at birth, and more. So I would like to open up the discussion at this time for anyone who has any thoughts on this or more information that they would like to share.
I'll jump right in, Nicolette. First of all, y'all heard me chuckle when Nicolette kind of introduced this topic. It is kind of surprising to me that it took as long as it did before mainstream media and any number of different media now recognize, you know, the Project 2025 is a major issue in this upcoming election in ways that the Heritage Foundation's manifestos have never quite risen to this level. As Nicolette pointed out, the Heritage Foundation has been around for decades and decades, pre-Reagan era, and has published these manifestos, about every 4 years with the, congruent with the presidential elections. The thing about this one is that even within the conservative community, this is recognized as, it's like, you gotta be kidding, okay? This is like, no holds barred. This is the Christmas list. This is the, if we get power, or if President, we end up with another President Trump, these are major contributors to his campaign. They're major contributors to, have been major contributors to his previous administration. This isn't some weird, off the wall, out in the middle of no place think tank published thing. These are people that are significant players and have been significant players in the previous Trump administration and will be players again if he wins. And this is like, you gotta be kidding. Even conservatives are saying, you gotta be kidding me. And in a lot of these, things that are written in this Project 2025, it's 920 pages, folks. I haven't read all of it. I don't know very many people who have read all of it. There are elements in there that I don't think anybody's really going to support, even Trump, because they're just so far out. But there's no question but that one of the main pillars, and they distilled this down to like four main pillars of Project 2025. And one of them is, so absolutely draconian, wind back the clock on women's rights and LGBTIQ plus, and you know, it's one of the four main pillars. And this is, they're coming for us. And this is a scripted playbook for the first 180 days of a new conservative administration. There you go. That's Project 2025. And it, you know, the thing is that, in my opinion, if we cannot rise to the level of the challenge of defeating a Trump presidential bid in this upcoming election, we will suffer things that just are have been, you know, the makings of sci-fi horrific, you know, future projection. This is going to be The Handmaid's Tale, you guys. And it's all right there. The playbook's right there. They're very out and proud to proclaim that this is what they're going to do. And it's like, so now what do we do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do personally? Are you going to vote? I hope to hell you're going to vote. There you go. Project 2025. What's our Project 2025? How about getting out there and voting?
Gene's comments I very helpful. I think some things that can be a little bit encouraging is anybody can write 900 pages of a fascist perfect program, but to actually merge that with the existing laws on the books is not an easy thing to do, and to get it through a Congress is not an easy thing to do. To have it fit in with Supreme Court decisions is not an easy thing to do. So it isn't as though we can simply have a president that can just say, like the Sun King of France in the 17th century, say, as I will, so shall it be done. That's really part of their illusion. And the idea that a president can just command things and make them happen, there's only 24 hours in a day, and presidents do a lot of things that are purely ceremonial, and if it's Donald Trump again, you know he's going to spend at least a quarter to a third of his presidency on the golf course. So how he's going to do all this is going to be very problematic, and you have to deal with people as individuals. So you'd first have to have standards, and then you'd have to enforce them. They'd have to be enforced at a court of law. It's more dangerous that it's possible that he might try to dry up elements of the executive branch that are necessary in order to make things happen, and to try to eliminate the administrative agencies that take care of Pure Food and Drugs and that actually enforce things like the Pure Food and Drug Act. The antitrust laws are handled in many ways by administrative agencies. There's so many things that just to put it into some sort of a policy format is appalling, but it's simply not practicable. So that's one of the things that should always bring us some comfort. What's a little scarier is that there's an appetite for this amongst the American electorate, that somehow or other people want to live in a world like this. But a lot of people do not want to live in a world like this. And if it started weighing on people's lives, I think that the resistance from American culture, with the internet that now makes information so available, where there's so many commentators, there's so many different constituencies that you have to somehow get behind a program like this, I think the pushback would be so intense that they would be sorry that they'd ever tried it. So there's my initial thought tonight.
So I just wanted to say a little bit more about Project 2025 and the threat that it poses to LGBTQIA2S plus rights. The Heritage Foundation describes itself as a conservative think tank with a mission to formulate, promote public policies based on principles of free enterprise, limited government, individual freedom, traditional American values, and a strong national defense. So this is kind of their overarching framework. The Heritage Foundation has stated support for freedom and limited government does not extend to LGBTQIA2S plus Americans, as evidenced by decades of waging losing battles against us. The Heritage Foundation, in combination with the Federalist Society, which has placed 6 of the current 9 sitting judges on the Supreme Court, 6 of the 9 judges, so the majority, have come from the Federalist Society, whose core values are rooted in constitutional originalism, whatever that means. And with a conservative administration, if we had a Republican presidency, a Republican Senate, and a Republican House, then this is their agenda. Their agenda is that they want to take away marriage equality. They want to take away protections against discriminations for LGBTQIA2S plus workers. They want to take away evidence-based health care for transgender youth. They want to support bans on LGBTQIA2S plus inclusive books, including books about racism. And also the Heritage Foundation wrote and coordinated state legislation across the country targeting healthcare for transgender youth. So they originated what is basically called copycat legislation, where one state after another would introduce the same law, the same laws into their legislatures for consideration, and they were all had basically the same language. They were targeting transgender youth. So, you know, in addition, these people are funding, you know, they're funding candidates for Congress. For instance, if you look at the recent attack ad by Joe Kent, who's running to get the nomination for Republican, for the Republican seat in the election against Marie Glusenkamp Perez in Washington, Joe Kent has been running very specific ads that are incredibly offensive to transgender people. They start by with a picture of the women's bathroom, and then Joe Kent says that he knows who belongs in the women's bathroom. And then he goes to a shot of women playing sports, and he says that he's going to protect his daughters against boys playing sports against his daughters. And then he goes to pictures of transgender athletes and, you know, talks about how these transgender people are basically, they're trying to force their transgender ideology on, you know, voters in Washington state. And he's gonna fight us, basically. That's basically what his ad says. And this is, you know, the money for these kind of ads is coming from the same people that are able to fund these 920-page documents. And they're the same people who are able to put 6 Supreme Court justices on the court to basically rule against us. What I was saying earlier was I was basically, you know, saying that one of the first things they're going to go after is they're going to go after equal marriage. They're going to try to find a pathway forward to challenge equal marriage, which is something that was just constitutionally decided less than a decade ago. So they would basically be reversing precedent that was decided less than a decade ago. And this is just some of the dangers we face. Nicolette, what do you have to say about this? We haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, you know, I understand the attempt to try to placate people with, you know, it's not saying it's not likely that this is going to happen, but the reality is we cannot be complacent in that, because I mean there are so many people that are pushing for these policies, not even just within Project 2025, but from the right as a whole, you know. And it's concerning to me that Trump recently stated in a speech that, you know, he was encouraging Christians to go out and vote. And he said, you know, he plans to, he's going to fix the country so that next time they won't have to vote. That sounds to me like they're trying to create a dictatorship. That's scary. The fact that so many of these policies are being proposed, all these really horrific policies that are basically trying to stop LGBT plus people from existing, that is horrifying. I remember we talked about, I think it was last year, we had the show talking about the genocide against trans people. And this is part of that genocide. They're trying to stop trans people from transitioning, both physically and socially. They're trying to stop people from going by a different name or a different gender. They're trying to stop people from learning that trans people and LGBT plus people exist. They are trying to erase us from existence, and that is genocide. So this is why we cannot be complacent. We cannot just, you know, sit back and hope that it's not going to happen. We need to actively prevent it from happening. All of us need to go out and vote. If you have any sort of concern at all that this could happen, that's why you need to go out and vote. Don't let it happen.
Amen, sister. And look, you know, we've been talking about some specifics, you know, that we, you know, where we're, our community is specifically targeted. You know, well, you know what? It's not just the specifics. There are peripherals that ripple out from this. Number one is they want to eliminate the Department of Education. They want to eliminate or severely reduce the amount of federal aid that goes to school districts, because that aid carries some, you know, requirements, okay? It's like, if you're gonna get federal aid to your school district, you know, there's some things you can't engage in, you know? And that's all been administered and created basically through the executive branch, executive order and rule and stuff, which is different than law technically. And I'm not going to get into the whole, you know, Gene's civics lessons here, but there are lots of ripples in what is published in Project 2025. They're coming after Social Security, they're coming after Medicaid. Those funds are a big, big piece of what enables, for example, the states of Washington and Oregon to provide, you know, OHP, AppleCare, and you know, they're, what they're saying is like, no. You know, if you can't use federal funds to support anything that supports reproductive rights, you can't use federal funds to, you know, do anything that supports LGBTIQ, mm-hmm. you know, or trans, you know, healthcare, you know, and not just for kids, for anybody. They're talking about making a lot of this stuff, not just you can't do it administratively, but they're talking about making it prosecutable, criminal activity for healthcare professionals. This is very much, you guys, The Handmaid's Tale, because that's where it's going. Maybe not in the first 180 days, okay? But that's where it's leaning, and it's leaning hard that direction. And now back to what I said earlier about even within conservative narratives, they're kind of going, holy cow, you know, you guys are really going for the, you know, the brass ring here. You're going for the, you know, the Christmas list of oppression and all of that. This is not anything like any election we've ever faced ever. I hate to say it, I hate to sound that dramatic, but this is not like any election we've ever faced any time ever.
I'd like to break in, if I may. Can I do that at this point?
Yeah, go ahead, Sheila.
I think we've established, and all of us, that we are appalled that we find this terrible legislation. And the thing that I'd like to point out, and I think it gives hope to people, is that you can't create a fascist society overnight. It's not an easy thing to do. The Germans tried it in the middle of a depression. They did it with great violence. They had already well-armed troops. Now, I will say that with a well-armed group of fanatics that want to go out and everybody turning into a domestic terrorist overnight, there'd be some big problems in America. Now, that's something that I am afraid of. But to use the actual devices of government and the laws to create a fascist state completely misunderstands what it takes to administer a legal system and how slow and ponderous the legal system is and how long it takes to even get a criminal in jail who's determined to go through the actual process of getting a trial. Even somebody that's an appalling criminal, some of these school shooters, I'm hearing that it took two years ago was when the actual atrocity took place, and they're only now being tried. So just exactly where in the court system is going to be all of the transsexuals and all of the transgender people, and trying to distinguish between the non-binaries and the true transsexuals, being able to be sufficiently narrow and give sufficient warning that we know exactly what a trans person is when they see one, just exactly how trans do you have to be trans, how many articles of clothing do you have to wear, how good does your makeup have to be, it's just not workable. And policing restrooms would have so many false positives that there would be countless lawsuits against private businesses of people who have been misidentified as being trans. And I'm telling you, I don't think a lot of businesses are going to want to have their clientele interrupted as they're trying to eat their sirloin steaks by having a bunch of police coming in as SWAT teams yanking trans people out of bathrooms. So all of these fears are really a legacy of our primary hurts and wounds we've all gone through. But in terms of actual practicality, an inefficient government can't survive. If they got rid of the Food and Drug Administration, all of a sudden, instead of having a salmonella, if you undercook your chicken, you might get a chicken that was raised on a dung heap somewhere in Arkansas. So I don't think that Americans are ready to live in that kind of world. And anybody that tries to make it happen is going to not only be ineffective, but they're going to look foolish. And the pushback of ordinary citizens would be absolutely overwhelming. And frankly, maybe they need to get a chance to try some of their little shenanigans on the local level and realize how foolish this is. Then there's the problem of double binds. If you say you can't treat transgender people, and yet you have a transgender patient with a transgender situation, and the standards of care indicate that you're guilty of malpractice and can be sued if you do not live up to the standard of care demanded by a medical board, what's going to happen if the law tells you to do one thing and then the standards of care tell you to do something else, the only answer would be, I can't take any transgender patients. But what if you have to? What if you're in a public, a transgender person comes in though? So do you see what I'm saying?
You know, Sheila, what you're saying is the exact kind of ridiculous situation that doctors are facing in states like Texas and Idaho, you know, trying to provide reproductive care. And it's going to be the same thing for transgender people, just like you're saying.
Yes. Be supported or reinforced by reduced funding availabilities for, you know, state-sponsored, you know, healthcare. It's not simple. It's multifaceted. It's very complex, and they have a very complex game plan that's articulated in 920 pages.
Yeah, I was just addressing, you know, that it is true that a fascist civilization, a fascist society, isn't just created overnight. But that's the thing, is it is a slow and gradual process where every step of the way you have an opportunity to prevent it, because every step will slowly lead towards that fascism. And so, like, when we were talking about the genocide show, for example, there are 10 steps to a genocide. It starts off with something small, and it grows and grows and grows until you're literally killing people or erasing them from existence. And that's why, you know, the UN has policies in place. When each step happens, this is what needs to happen to prevent any further steps from happening, because you need to stop it at the first step or the very first step that you're able to in order to prevent things from getting worse. And that's why, you know, if we give them an inch, they will take a mile. We need to stop them now. We need to nip it in the bud. That's what I've been saying. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, the problem with that is that we don't have the power to nip anything in the bud. We're too small a community. But what we can count on is that very overkill is exactly what will doom the project. The mere fact that they put it out in that way is shows their lack of awareness. They live in a little bubble of self-affirmation. They have no idea what they're talking about. And remember, they have to do this in 4 years, and they'd have to do it with massive institutional resistance. They'd have to allocate the funds. You can pass laws all you want. If you don't allocate the funds to enforce it, you can't even begin. And let me give you a classic example, which was what I wanted to put in. The one thing that Trump gets huge applause lines for is he says, I'm going to have more people deported than you've ever seen before. And he is talking about figures as high as 20 million people. Now, these people are integrated. They have jobs. They've become part of communities. They have leaseholds with various apartments. They are people that are part of our republic here. You cannot sit there and arrest them overnight. And how do they plan to get them back? Which country? How are they going to pay? Are you going to fly them back? What is the airline tickets going to cost? What are you going to do if you put everybody in a giant cattle boat and somehow ship them overseas? You think there wouldn't be huge visuals of people crying, horrible separation scenes? There's no way it can happen, because we're too visible a society anymore. Even the Nazis with the trains going to Auschwitz, these relocation camps, the reason he got away with it is he was fighting a war at the time, and there wasn't food enough for even the population. There wasn't, he was fighting a two-front battle. You can't do this in a time of peace in America with the internet and everybody in the world with a cell phone taking pictures of even the slightest police violence. So that's the point I'm saying, is we've already stopped them by the mere fact that they've bitten off so much more than they can chew. And that should be our comfort, and that should be our strategy. We should call into question that what kind of people even use this kind of language, because that's the giveaway, that they really are appalling people. It's that they like to try to appear as God-fearing, decent Americans speaking out of our colonial heritage that gives them some sort of cover. But once they show their face, they look exactly like they are, as fascists.
That's great. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about Project 2025, just with the time that we have left. We're more than halfway through the show. It's been a really good show. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio, and we're talking today about Project 2025 and what we can do to resist it. So one of the things that Project 2025 is doing is it's calling on the Department of Justice to defend, quote unquote, defend the quote unquote First Amendment rights of people who want to discriminate against LGBTQ people. It also wants to notify states that their bans on abortion and medical services may violate federal law. So they're trying to encourage states to say that, you know, it's okay to discriminate and that it's your First Amendment right to do that. They also, I mean, they're very specific in their policy work. So like, for instance, I think that we talked about this earlier, they want to take away all federal healthcare dollars that go to supporting gender appropriate medical services, which means that, like you were saying earlier, Jean, all of the funding for OHSU, all of the funding for Kaiser and for Providence. I don't know if Providence does anything, but
the Oregon Health Plan. Oregon Health Plan is that's all Medicaid, you know, funded, you know, backed up, you know, it's state funds as well, but you know, it wouldn't exist without the federal funds. And they're gonna strip that.
Right.
Boom.
They also want to follow the Florida playbook with regard to getting access to hormones and to other gender appropriate services. So they want to make it very, very difficult for doctors to prescribe hormones, for doctors to have any kind of, I mean, not just for transgender youth who are maybe, you know, over 13 or over 16, if they're getting either puberty blockers or if they're 16 and they want to get on T or hormones.
I don't know how many people listening to this show will relate to this comment, but what they're talking about is winding the clock back to back alley abortions, mm-hmm. back alley underground, trans healthcare, back alley, you know, underground black market, you know, and all of that with the specter of not only with the specter of criminal prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more extreme you can get.
Can I ask a question at this point that I'd like each of you to try to answer? Please. Let's just say that they took something very obvious and they said, we're going to go for strict biological definitions and we're going to do that across the board for everything. And as a result, we're not going to allow any sort of same-sex marriage anymore. Now, what are you going to do with all the people that have signed contracts and they've taken out leases, they've used certain names on their leases, they've done especially with regard to a community property, they've made wills based upon the assumption that as married people that their spouse is going to inherit certain things under community property laws. What's going to happen to all of that? And do you think that wouldn't cause a flood of litigation that would absolutely swamp our court systems that are already completely buried in litigation? So in other words, it's just astonishing to me whenever I hear Trump speak and I hear people asserting these things. They seem to, you know what, it would be the equivalent of saying you could take a running automobile engine and just somehow fix it while it's still running. You wouldn't have to stop it. You could just kind of insert the part maybe there'd be a little stutter for a second, then everything would go on just like before. And of course, that's completely impossible. But this is it shows the desperation of the other side.
My friend, you and I share the affliction of having some legal training. You know, here's what I'm observing, hon. You cannot rely on precedential. You know, I mean, precedent, not president, precedential law in this country anymore. It's scary in that it's like, yeah, we've said this before, and yeah, this is the way we've been, you know, yeah, but we don't think so much. Not anymore. It's like we're seeing it, and it's happening at the highest court levels, and God help us if the, you know, if the other branches of government are also in a position to be supportive of interpretations that say, you know, these litigations that you're talking about are like, no, sorry, moving on, done, get out of here. We're throwing this out. Look what's happened with the damn stuff that's, you know, that Trump's been charged with.
Is that we as trans people know what it's like to live at the micro level of our own little private lives. And when you were mentioning, for instance, the idea of back alley stuff for trans people, back alley hormones, back alley stuff, unfortunately, there are significant parts of this country that are already, even with an enlightened administration, are encountering back alley everything. That's what this series posed was all about.
We always were. What we're lamenting is a potential rollback of, you know, out in the open, and, you know, acknowledging me as a human being, you know, level, you know, policies that give me the health care that I need. You know, it's like that's what we've been celebrating for like 10, 15 years, you know. Well, that's what we're lamenting also here is the potential rollback of that. And it's not that way every place. You know, we live on the West Coast. I'm sorry. Everybody that's going to hear us, unless they're, you know, on a podcast or something, is West Coast. And
yeah.
It's not like this everywhere.
There's a class structure built into being trans, and that there's lots of our community that will never even be able to have a conversation like this because they're completely stealth. They're doing what the best they can. And so sometimes I think we're either ahead of ourselves or behind ourselves. When we're ahead of ourselves when we think we have power we don't have, we're behind ourselves when we're oblivious to the fact that we've made some incredible progress, and people will stand by us that in the old days would never have stood by us, and we should take comfort in that. We've done a lot of good that cannot be legislated away overnight, even by fascists.
So, Nicolette, what do you think about all this?
Like Jean was saying, just because implementing these policies and laws wouldn't be very practical isn't going to stop them from trying to do it. And at that point, the country is going to be plunged into chaos. And yes, we do have more people supporting us and on our side than we ever did before. You know, trans rights have progressed so far in just the past 5 or 10 years alone. However, that's also resulted in this pushback from conservatives, from transphobes, who are desperately trying to take those rights back. They're trying to take those rights away. And that's causing those people, even if they are in somewhat of a minority now, they are more vocal. And I don't think it's even as high a majority as we'd like to hope of the number of people who support trans people versus who are against us. It may be more like 55-45 at best. So we do need to be aware of the fact that if we don't put a stop to it now, these people very well could essentially boo forward as much as they possibly can until they take over. And we're looking at these transphobes claiming that if they don't stop this woke gender ideology now, we're going to come after their children and blah, blah, blah. And for people that are maybe more in the middle and don't have as much of an opinion, that can very easily sway them to, oh, well, I'm concerned about the children. I don't want the children to be negatively affected. And that can turn them against us as well. So that's mm-hmm. something we do need to be concerned about, even if it may not seem as practical, it is a reality.
Now, when you say stop them, let's take five practical steps we could do to stop them. What would you recommend? Five actual things we could do to stop that.
Thanks. So there's a couple of areas where Project 2025 also focuses on that we haven't really gotten to so far in this show. And I think they're like a couple of the first places where they're really going to try to go. One of the first ones is that they want to go to the military. They want to use the Department of Defense as kind of a testing ground for some of what they're going to try to do nationally. So they want to go to the Department of Defense. They want to reverse policies that allow transgender individuals to serve in the military. So that's like one of the first things that they're going to go after if they come to power. And it's one of those areas where, I mean, we've actually done a couple of shows about what a big breakthrough it was when they started allowing transgender people to serve in the military. And there's been a couple of books written about it. And it's been a really positive plus for transgender folks. We actually did a panel about this several years ago. The other area where they really want to go after, and they're just chomping at the bits to go after this, I think we are going to unfortunately see this in the next 2 years, regardless of who the president is. I think we're going to still see this, is they want to limit the application of the Supreme Court's ruling in Bostock versus Clayton County, which held that Title VII sex discrimination protection should be applied to LGBTQIA2S+ people. So they're going to try to limit Title VII, and they're going to do it by offering a direct challenge. I think it's really clear in all of the state legislation that they've put in place. I mean, there's about like 20 plus states right now that have passed laws that limit the rights of transgender kids to engage in athletics in school. And I think that they're going to use that as a basis for attacking, you know, the Bostock versus Clayton ruling. And they're going to try to just eliminate protections for LGBTQIA2S+ athletes. And this is something that, you know, people may not necessarily think, oh, that's the biggest deal in the world. Like, that's a huge impact. But for transgender athletes, it's going to be huge. And it's just, they're going at this very piecemeal, like one thing at a time. So this is going to be like, I think this is definitely going to be on the table, regardless of who the next president is. So you were going to ask a question, Sheila, about what can we do about this? I'd love to hear your question.
Okay, I'm going to let's start with this one. What does it cost the government to train a transgender person because they get intense training now in the service? It's not like everybody is paid just to march back and forth. To train a specialist in any field in today's military is a massive, massive cost to the government. When you fire somebody, all of that training goes right out the door with the person. So I think a lot of people are going to start being aware of that. Another question then that I'd like to ask is regarding to the one that you just mentioned of, suppose you say that trans kids can't compete in sports, which seems to be such a big deal. Well, I was a trans kid and I competed in the one sport that I could do. And it was something where we trained with the girls swim team at the same time. We didn't have two swimming pools after school, have one for the boys and one for the girls. True, we had separate locker rooms, but I trained and swam next door with the girls team and the girl. And so I'm trying to think exactly which sports that they keep looking at to say that we've got a big problem. Let's say it was a tennis team, and I will tell you that a lot of the girl athletes were better than the boy athletes at a lot of things, including tennis and golf. So my big question is, how many trans students are there in the first place? Then how many even care to get into sports? And then after the fact, saying that they can't do it, is are we going to make room in the male team for a lot of transitioning trans women to suddenly be playing on the football team, and saying, well, we have to have an equal chance to be a tackle on the football team because we don't want to hurt this person, so we better be very careful that they're not injured, and vice versa. There are some very strong and excellent tennis players out there that could absolutely wipe up the floor with any little skinny guy that wants to play tennis. So what I'm trying to say here is these things are simply not workable. And if there is a way that people are willing and the country is willing to take on the burden that it goes to with discrimination, how costly that is to a society, the amount of time and effort it's going to take to hire more prosecutors, more judges, more policemen, we're going to have to more jails, more prisons. I don't see it happening. And that's what I'm trying to point out to everybody tonight.
Well, that's great. Thank you, Sheila. So we've just got a couple of minutes left. Our hour has gone by pretty quick. We've touched on some of the points in Project 2025. I mean, it's a huge plan. We need, obviously, a completely different plan. I think it's a plan that we've actually been working on for a while and we're implementing. It's called Project LGBTQIA2S+Equality. And we've been working on it every day for our entire lives. But let's get some final thoughts from folks, starting with Nicolette.
So what I want to say to end this is, you know, my goal here with the show was not to comfort anyone, and it was not to make anyone feel that we are doomed. My goal here was to inspire and motivate, because we have the power to create change. If we don't want this to happen to us, we have the power to stop it. We have the power to vote. We have the power to encourage others to vote. And we have the power to educate. And that's the whole goal of not just this episode in particular, but Transpositive as a whole. My goal is to educate people and inspire people and motivate people to create change.
Thanks. Sheila, do you have any final thoughts?
Just one. I appreciate that, Nicolette. I think that that's very, very admirable. And I think that our just living our lives is the best way to educate people, because people finally recognize that we are of them. We come from families like them. We have relationships like them. We are trying to live our lives. And I think we do that every day of our lives. That's our empowerment. But what I was trying to point out is that when we think that we have more strength than we do, we actually strengthen the narrative of the opposition that presumes that we have so much power. And I wanted to get this in. Last night at the Olympics, there was a fracas over the fact that there was a transgender and gay presence in the opening ceremonies in Paris. And it's raising the hackles of a lot of people who would like to say that that kind of visibility is innately either blasphemous or disrespectful, as opposed to being humorous and reflecting the breadth of French culture. So for those that did see the opening ceremonies, they can see that when we become visible, we also seemingly become a threat. But at the same time, people recognize that you can't make things as big as the Olympic Games disappear. And they can't sponge away the fact that there was a transgender presence in that opening ceremony.
Thanks. Gene, do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, I do. Pure and simple, you know, read it. Read it, or at least, you know, go examine it with other people that have read it, and we'll summarize it for you. You know, 920 pages is a lot.
And you can
recognize, go ahead.
I was going to say, you can find the entire project, the entire blueprint, on the Heritage Foundation's website for anyone does want to go read it.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was chuckling very early in this whole show, you know, about it's like, oh, my God, you know, come on. This has been out there since, like, February, something like that. February. And it's just taken until the middle of the summer before it's like everybody's going, oh, my God, here's this. You know, and it's like, God, pay attention. Pay attention and go read. There's my comment.
Great. Thanks so much. You've been listening tonight to Transpositive PDX. My name is Emma.
My name's Nicolette.
I'm Sheila.
Yes, you are. I love you all. Oh, my God. What a great conversation. I love it.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Are we dead? Okay.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing forward discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Thank you.
world around me seems to always be. Every night and day, I hang my head and weep, yes, and weep. I love my baby, I want it for myself. If he don't be mine, he won't have nobody else. He has left me. I'll do the best I can. I'm a do-right kid in a friendly place I land. Now I got the don't have me. Can't be satisfied. Every night and day I hang my head and cry. I go to the fight, go to fire up there. Lose all the text, we're gonna rock away from here. Now my love has been refused. Now I got the don't have
to. Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Here we go again, it's the K.